The boy to blame for these talks is Nikhil, because he chased me with a camera for 2 years, and me being shy and quiet and introverted, I used to run away. And then one day, I think what clinched it was, I was in Goa, and he was there. You came there specially? I don't remember. And he knocked on the door with his camera, and he said, okay, if you don't want to talk, at least talk about your guru. And that's when I said, that I will do. And thanks to his efforts, the teaching has spread all over. Thank you. Whenever Nikhil calls me and I say, Nikhil, what's the news? He says, no news is good news, which is what I used to say. Or he says, no news, thank God, which is everyone's experience. Because news is pleasure or pain. When you've seen enough go by, no news is good news. One day I was having tea at the club with a group of friends who are mostly older than me. So I walked in, this was just on yesterday. And one of the friends at the table is actually my father's very close friend. He was extremely close to my father when my father was alive. He's in his mid-70s now. So he asked me, what's the news? And I said, no news is good news. And on that table, there was a collective understanding that it's really nice when no news is good news. So he said, but I'll tell you something. It reminds me, this is Lat Uncle is his name. He says, it reminds me of a friend of mine who owned a lot of horses. But he would give the strangest names to the horses. Really bizarre. You know, you would wonder why a man can name his horses such names. So, one day he saw they have a book with the races mentioned and the names, and he saw the name Bad News. So he said, how can this guy name a horse Bad News? How does he expect a horse called Bad News to win a race? He said, this is the limit. So he said, I went to my friend and I told him, boss, this is too much. You know, I can understand you have a quirk for funny names or ridiculous names, but how can you call a horse Bad News? So the friend told Lat Uncle, he said, you don't understand. No news is good news, but bad news travels fast.
Bad news wins.
Fastest.
And one quality which I really admire about him is, he sees the good in everyone. You know, he says, no matter how much a person may upset me, I don't, you know, you have a natural preference for some people and not for others, but if I come across them, I find out for myself, what is that quality I like about this person? So, you know how clubs are. Men gossip as much as women. It's the same thing. So they were all talking about this one boy who comes who talks nonstop, you know, and how people try to avoid him because he just keeps talking from the minute he sees you till he leaves. So one person on the table was telling Lat that how can you even, you know, see good in this man because he just gets at you from the minute he sees you, he doesn't leave you. So he says, no, what happens is when I'm taking a walk, he comes up to me and he starts talking, but one day I told him, look, I understand that it is your nature to talk. So you keep talking and I will listen, but I won't reply back. And he said, for 1 hour, that man kept talking while they took a walk. Because that was his nature. See, one is not imposing how one should be on someone else. People are accepted because the understanding is deep that they are made a certain way, just like you are. Is that not love? Someone who accepts everyone for who they are. But that person may not necessarily be a person who expresses himself verbally and his love verbally. But is that being not love? That gets missed. And we get caught up in dualistic representations of love. So when people are accepted for who they are, It means one is accepting more and more God's will. When people are accepted for who they are, one is no longer looking at individuals. When people are accepted for who they are, we are automatically accepting ourselves for who we are. And this results in a loss of individuality, me and my story. The vision changes subtly. Relationships transform gradually. That is why I call the teaching a slow poison for the thinking mind. You don't even know that it has sunk into your cells. But you realize in retrospect, my God, these things used to upset me 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Now I feel so different in terms of response. Then you realize that something shifted and I was not even aware of it. And that is why my guru emphasized on this, living the teaching, which actually means being lived by the teaching. Because a deep understanding is all that is truly required for the change of vision. This is seeing with the third eye. Seeing with the third eye is not seeing with these eyes. When there's a loss of individuality, it means seeing with the third eye, not something esoteric. And with the deep understanding, you find yourself using three words less and less. Would, could, and should. If I would have done that, that would have happened. You should be that way. You should not be this way. These words start evaporating. In a sentence, they may come through as a manner of speaking. But when you accept God's will, you are not trying to rectify what you perceive is a mistake in the divine plan. And the falling away of what should be means getting more and more established in what is. The falling away of what could be is being established in what is, which eventually results in peace, not a blissful experience. People used to find my own teacher's teaching too simple because all he spoke about was peace of mind in daily living. Sat Chit Ananda, the bliss, they were looking at the bliss. But what other bliss than the bliss of peace? And this I felt intuitively. And then later on I started reading Ramana Maharshi. And recently I came across one line which sums up this understanding. Now when it comes from someone like Bhagwan, nobody wants to argue. But when there's a sage in South Mumbai while he was alive, ex-banker, you know, you're up for debate, which is the way things are. The golden crown that deserves to be worn by sadhus. The golden crown that deserves to be worn by sadhus on their heads is only the tranquility that is peace. That's the only line you could read from this book. Is that not beautiful? Nobody wants it. And what is peace other than the absence of the thinking mind? Let's be practical. The thinking mind that is engaged in incessant thinking. It's just that. The elimination of thinking about an imaginary past. Sorry, a dead past or an imaginary future. It could well be imaginary past too. And what did the Buddha say? As my guru used to just mention, samsara is dukkha. Nirvana is shanti. When you walk through the desert of life, at the end of it, if you find a table on which there's a glass of water, there's a Coca-Cola, there's a single malt, and other such drinks, and you are asked to take your pick, which one will you choose?
Depends on my nature.
Well, you walk through the desert. Don't forget that. And as Maharaj would say, it's like a man who says, I will have milk, I will have soda, and I'll have tea, and I'll have coffee, but I have no need for water. So this teaching brings you back to plain water. Because your own experience is that pleasures are transient. And one starts becoming more and more quiet. Not necessarily physically quiet. I don't mean that. I mean, our talking is like the tip of an iceberg because 90% of it is inside here. That's why when Eckhart had said in one of his books, I don't remember which one, that be careful if you see someone jabbering away on the road and saying, look at that madman go by, because we see many of them in India. Because you're doing the same thing, only yours is covert. So who is more mad? He's at least honest. Could you imagine if you start voicing all the thoughts going on in your mind? I had read a book which was published in the 70s about, and one of the things in that book was about watching ourselves and what we say. And it said you'll be surprised that so much of talking is about our own story, and talking to others about our story is to get attention to our story. Talk to a wall. The wall doesn't give you attention. Talk to God. I have a friend who's generally quiet, but he says, I have massive dialogues with God. I abuse Him. I love Him. I say what I want. So He's my outlet. I said, great. Because whatever he vents is between him and his God, but in daily living, he's quite equanimous. So these are pointers, you know. Why do we talk too much? Is there a reason? If it's our nature, it's fine. Are we talking where, you know, we are sharing with others? Or is it centered on me and my problems and the poor me? Because sometimes one realizes that it is a need to get attention, because if I do not get attention, who am I? If I am sitting in a group of 5-6 people and if I keep quiet, nobody will look at me. It's a possible scenario I'm outlining. So introspection, which is what the sages say, which Bhagwan says, constantly look back, see where you are. And the gift of the teaching is that the deeper it sinks in, this talking, which is the thinking mind, starts dissolving. And what you are left with is peace of mind. And the most beautiful part is that in deep sleep, we are most at peace. The worst stories disappear in deep sleep. Is that not a great pointer? Look at God's compassion. That for 1/3 of our lives, He's at least gifted us with deep sleep, which is the absence of story. The absence of me and my story has been gifted to us for 1/3 of our lives, which is everybody's experience. I slept well. I slept well. I had deep sleep. You were absent in deep sleep. Your absence of yourself was the peace of deep sleep. Then you have touched your toe in the still waters. My God, I don't do anything to get into deep sleep, do you? Can one do anything to get into deep sleep? You don't do anything to get into deep sleep. And your own experience is that I was at peace when I was fast asleep. And that is why Bhagwan said deep sleep is your natural state, which was a pointer, which does not disappear when you wake up. How could it? Otherwise there would be no continuity. So what is that which is present in deep sleep, dream, and the waking state? Your very being. That is your gift. We were talking about someone the other day who said how when they are looking at an object, sometimes they get an experience of, you know, seeing the object explode in colors and shapes and, you know, vibrancy. But my point is that is an experience. The actual explosion is seeing an object without the intervention of the thinking mind. Seeing a flower for what it is, without the label of the word flower, and without your mind partially in the past or in the future, is what is consciousness, which is peace of mind. Keep hammering away at the same thing, not something to be sought, but something which is one's very nature. All that is needed is a stripping away of the false.
Pleasure is also transient, yet the mind within wants to pursue that. It gives a sense of elation, joy, pleasure. When does this acrobatic actually rest? How that understanding goes
to... See, the natural course of life is to realize that pleasures are transient, because that is your life's experience. So you keep seeing that when you run after pleasure, you enjoy it for some time, and then you're looking for the next pleasure. But why are you seeking pleasure, and what gives you pleasure is your very self. You are actually seeking yourself in something transient. So it's a natural mechanism where you, especially when you're young, seek pleasure after pleasure after pleasure, and each pleasure is the harbinger of pain, which is your life's experience. It comes and goes. You love someone, you found someone in your youth, and then there's pain afterwards. An object you acquire. Like, I actually have a friend who had purchased a Jaguar, and he took all of us for a drive in it, and after 6 months he said, now I want a bigger model, which is life. So there's a natural understanding that my happiness is obviously, which was depending on pleasures, it is not a lasting happiness. But that happiness, that which is arising from within, is actually seeking true happiness, a happiness which lasts and which does not depend on pleasures, because pleasures come and go. When you realize that this happiness which I'm deriving from pleasures is transient, it lasts only till the pleasure lasts. When the realization dawns that that is not true happiness, the understanding comes that obviously for happiness to be true happiness, it should not depend on a pleasure, because pleasures are cheats. So when the understanding dawns that if I want a true lasting happiness deep down, it must not depend on pleasures, then the journey begins. Can I get that happiness without running after pleasures? And that is true happiness, which is the peace of mind, which Bhagwan is talking about. So even the very thought is an arising of that process. Already it is set in motion, because you have reached some level where you know that I cannot derive an authentic happiness from pleasures, because they come and go. It is irreversible. So what is projected out sense, in terms of sense objects, dependent on what I perceive as outside me, from which I derive pleasure from, starts going back. It reverses gears and starts going within. That is the spiritual journey. That is a natural process. Because in the moment of heightened pleasure, there is no you. In the moment of heightened pleasure, there is no you. But that does not last. That is an experience. So then the search begins for what is that which is not an experience, which does not depend on a pleasure, and which is permanent, which is true happiness. Sukha Shanti, as Ramesh would say. Sukha Shanti is obviously an absence of all that is transient, an absence of things which do not depend on the senses, is peace, which is the peace of the Bal Krishna, the baby, before the age of 3 or 4, the peace of being. The peace of being is where you come and rest, not becoming. If objects are enjoyed, they are enjoyed with the full knowledge and understanding that while it is there, the enjoyment is there. Make no mistake, it does not mean walking away from pleasures. But the understanding is now completely different. Knowing that everything is transient, there is no incessant seeking for pleasure after pleasure. If something presents itself, or there's a natural arising for something you like doing, it happens spontaneously. But the dependency on seeking pleasure after pleasure after pleasure, that starts withdrawing. That is why Maharaj said that between the banks of pleasure and pain, my life flows. But the problem with you is you go and sit on the banks. You want only the pleasure. It's not possible. He did not say life means no pleasure and no pain. It was his own experience. He himself has said that even my experience was, I lost many people in my life. It taught me detachment. Simple words from a sage. Simple. Now the question about when will it stop is God's will. When the realization happens that your happiness need not depend on an outside source, then it starts happening. And that is why relationships was the primary focus of Ramesh. And he kept saying that peace of mind through relationships, whether it is yourself, whether it is your family, your close friends, your colleagues, or even the stranger on the road, he would keep saying that, right, Christian? Peace of mind through relationships. Do you know why? Because deep down, when there is a full acceptance of God's will, there are no relationships like that. Because it's an interaction with the divine. When you can truly see someone else through those eyes, that means they are not two, subject and object, me and you, which actually becomes me versus you. You did this to me. How could you? Very practical. Peace of mind through relationships. I'll give you an extreme example. When somebody in this room met one, a Ghori Baba, who said, boasting of his feats and said, I can fly up 12 feet in the air, come down, and if anyone says something negative to me, I can dispatch him to heaven right away. Such are my powers. And it reminded me of Bhagwan. When they were in the ashram, which was just about built, and some robbers came with sticks, and to take their possessions, which they had very few of in any case, some of Bhagwan's devotees got up to start a fight, and Bhagwan said, no, it is their nature, they are the thieves. And what we do is our nature. Who is more at peace? You want to dispatch everyone to heaven whom you don't get along with? You want to badmouth everyone you don't get along with? You want to criticize and condemn everyone you don't get along with? You hate everyone you don't get along with? How many people will it take of you not getting along with to understand that it is the same divine which flows through everyone? How many will it take? That is why when Maharaj was asked, but you're not a very expressive man. All you express is sometimes irritability or impatience. But he said, how can I, if love is my very nature, no longer subject-object relationship status. That goes. That is being in the now. It's like when we had organized Eckhart's talk in 2002 in Bombay. I was very surprised because we must have sold about 1,000 copies of his book, and 500 people showed up for the talk. And there was an incident of stone pelting a day earlier, and he said, stone pelting will come in the newspapers, but a gathering like this will find no mention. And perhaps more people came for the talk than those who were pelting stones on the streets, but no. So it's truly a gift. The teaching is truly a gift, and where we are is truly a gift. That is when, as you use the right word, empathy. One girl had come here some time ago and said that she went to a guru and he said, empathy means you're a weak person. And I don't know what else she said, but I said, no. It's a felt oneness with being. Where is the weakness in that? It's a felt oneness with being, so you feel. And that too, it arises naturally. So what can be wrong with something which arises naturally? In some people it arises, in some people it doesn't. Who is to tell whom that it means you're weak because empathy arises? Who is telling whom what? Maharaj had said in, I think, I Am That. I don't remember if it was in I Am That. One foreigner had asked him this question about boundaries and, the conflicts have been going on as we know. And he had said, ultimately, the only two religions that will be left will be male and female. And that too, he would say, you are not even that, you are prior to that, because prior to knowing you are a man or a woman, you know that you are. And as my teacher would say it so beautifully, he would say that if you were lying on a bed in a hospital and your memory was completely wiped out, what are you left with is the truth, which is, an impersonal awareness of being. I am. There's no I am man, I am woman. The only truth, which nobody can deny, he would say. The only truth that nobody can deny. Because to deny that you exist is to prove that you exist. Christian and Lars were very close to Ramesh and used to visit him very much in those years. That's where we met.
He changed our lives 20 years ago.
20 years ago. What a gift.
Yes, greatest ever.